Good afternoon and welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities in collaboration with KCBX and made possible through the underwriting by Joan Geller Sargent. I'm your host, Chris Kington Barker. Despite the dominance in professional funeral services, families in most states are entitled to care for their own dead. What was once a normal everyday life prior to Civil War is now making a resurgence. Heidi Boucher, home death care guide and filmmaker, wrote, directed, and produced In the Parlor, The Final Goodbye, a film aimed at broadening awareness of alternative funeral practices and highlighting the options and benefits for caring for one's own after death. The film highlights stories of three families who chose a more personal, environmentally friendly, and fulfilling path. Heidi is joining me today to talk about her work, the film, and the impact it's having. And our show today is live. We invite you to join our conversation with your comments and questions. And you can do so by calling us at area code 805-781-3875. And Heidi, are you there?
I am. Hi, Chris.
Thank you for calling in. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
This film was actually shown this year at the San Luis Obispo International Film Festival.
Yes, it was.
And it was fairly recent after you released the film, correct?
Yeah, we haven't officially released it to the, to the masses. We are doing the film festival circuit right now, so we were really excited when San Luis Obispo Film Festival invited us to participate. It was our first film festival, so we were very excited, and we've just been doing the film festival circuit and will be for the next few months.
So I have lots of questions for you, and I hope people call in with their questions and comments too. But Heidi, you're a death care guide, and what does that mean?
A death care guide is somebody who assists and really supports families who are caring for their own loved ones after death. So what we do is we oversee and just educate and really support the family in taking this on. So there's a lot of education around it and some practical hands-on guidance as well. But mostly we're here to support the families who want to do this.
So is it similar to what funeral directors would do?
That's a dicey question.
Yeah.
We're not licensed funeral directors.
Right.
There are some licensed funeral directors who do this. But a licensed funeral director is in a whole nother category.
Okay.
And we certainly, at least, well, I'm not going to speak for others, but I'm not here to pretend to be or work as a licensed funeral director. I'm very careful about that. But talking to people around this issue and about this issue of being able to care for their own loved ones, that's a pretty important part of the picture. I'm fortunate where I actually work very closely with a funeral home and have a very lovely relationship so that we can work together, because I think that's really important.
I'm really curious how you got involved in this.
Well, it's sort of a interesting thing in the sense that I don't feel like I chose it. I think it kind of chose me. As a youngster, I lived with a family who was doing this kind of work way back, in the late 70s. And it was something that I just felt was the normal thing to do. I didn't know that people did it differently. I thought everybody cared for their own dead. And especially because I also lived in Europe as well when I was a child, that's what people did over there. So I really had no clue that people did it any other way. I knew that there were funeral homes, mm-hmm. but I just assumed, it's just what you do.
It's an alternative.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely an alternative. But the family that I was living with, Nancy Jewel Poor, who's been a pioneer in this work for many years and who has written a book about it, I lived with them and was very close to their family. And so as a youngster, it was our task to help sand the caskets and build the caskets and line the caskets with silk and, you know, to really be involved in what was taking place in the home.
And
so, yeah.
And then talk a little bit about how you came about making this film. What prompted you to write and direct and produce this film?
My day job has been and is in film production, and has been for, you know, quite some time. In addition to doing my film production work, I'm also have been a home death care guide for over 30 years. So about 10 years ago, I thought, oh, gosh, maybe I should do something and start filming this, or at least creating something. I interviewed some people and started, and all the footage tragically got lost. Not by me.
Oh, my goodness.
By someone else. So I thought, okay, well, maybe the timing is not right. So I picked up the camera again about 6 years ago when a very close family friend was getting ready to pass away. And I had this feeling that this would be a perfect opportunity to be with the family since I was helping and participating in that death process. You know, they trusted me, and I was able to have a camera and just start documenting things. So it was a very natural fit. Shortly afterwards, there was another family that I was introduced to, or they contacted me for help, and they seemed so open that I just flat out asked them if they wanted to be part of what I was doing. So they eagerly said yes, and we were able to follow them for a year and really, really connect with the family in a way that was really lovely and very intimate, surrounding the whole process leading up to Julie's death. It was just really lovely. And then the third family was also acquaintances and community friends that we were connected to. And it was a very tragic story, but I felt like I had a good rapport with them, and I asked them if I could relive and reopen their story to give a variety of different subjects to show people that this is not just for somebody who's planning, but also for somebody who dies suddenly.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Yeah, yeah.
So it really, it just worked out. And I was very fortunate to ask a colleague of mine, Ruby Sketchley, the co-director from Tiny Octopus Productions, to be involved. And it, you know, we just went ahead and went on to do it. So it's been very interesting.
Now, it took you a number of years to actually do this film, correct?
It did. By the time I started, I think it was probably tip to toe, 5.5 years.
It's a lot of work.
Yeah. Yeah.
were there some things that surprised you along the way that you didn't expect to happen?
Gosh.
In the making?
You know, this is my first documentary, and it really was a learning curve for me in the sense that I just decided, hey, I'm going to do this. So every step of the way, even though I'm in production and working as a production designer or a producer or director, it's a whole different thing when you make that decision to take something this big on.
Mm-hmm.
So everything was a surprise. When somebody is producing and you are hired to work for them, all that stuff is behind closed doors, and there are people that are doing that the moment that I stepped in and saw, gosh, well, I'm going to have to take care of that, or I'm going to have to do that, or this is what we're going to have to do, it changes it because it becomes yours and you're responsible for it.
Did you feel differently about this film than you did the other films as a result? Do you have a different relationship with it, do you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I feel like I've been birthing this project.
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, it's momentous and huge as far as what I've put into it. And I think my family has watched that as well. And also other community members and my colleagues as well, the Ruby and Sketch and other teammates. We've all invested so much time and energy and love into this project that it's been all-consuming.
You know, I had read, I think it was on one of your sites, and you had mentioned that your team and crew, while filming this, were deeply affected. Can you talk a little bit more about that, what you meant by that?
Yeah. In choosing the individuals that I wanted to be part of this, I really had to look at them and see, okay, I trust you, I know you, and you do good work, but how will you fit into the environment that's very, very intimate, very emotionally sensitive, and how, you know, how will you be in that environment? So I really looked at my pool of colleagues, and we all did. We all, you know, looked at everyone and thought, how do we best go about this? And it was very interesting because one of our DPs had lost his mother some time before, so I was very sensitive about bringing him in, and yet I knew he needed to be the one there. And there were moments where all of us would be in the room and we're listening to these stories, and I would feel and sense that there was a lot of emotional stuff coming up for our crew. They were very professional and handled it very well. But I knew that not only was I opening up this very sensitive topic for the families who are reliving it, but also my crew having to experience this and feel that. So it was this balancing act of making sure that everybody was okay and continually checking in with them to say, hey, how are you doing?
That's probably very different than you would normally do with one of your other films, correct? That is a story, but maybe something that's not quite as intense.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I've never done anything like this.
I mean,
this is really way out on a different branch for me.
What impact were you hoping to have on the audiences that viewed it?
Well, I don't think it is about me hoping and wishing that there's an impact on the audience. I think my biggest thing, and I can say for my co-director as well, that we want people to engage in the conversation and to really stop and think about this other option.
And the conversation is around what?
Well, the conversation being around home funerals and connecting more with your loved one after death. To having a more, well, having more involvement with the activity or the ceremony. And there are different degrees that one can have. But I think the impact that we would want is for people to say, hey, wow, I didn't know that, and to reevaluate or to just check in with themselves or their families about this option.
So to know there's an option rather than an automatic assumption that there's a certain way that things are done and that's how they're done.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a real quick break, Heidi. You are listening to Central Coast Voices here on KCBX, your public radio station. If you just joined us today, I'm talking with filmmaker Heidi Boucher. Her documentary, In the Parlor, The Final Goodbye, takes a critical look at the traditional American relationship with death and begins an inquiry into the home death care movement that has begun to surface and take hold. The film takes the viewers on a journey where many people have not gone before and challenges them to reflect on a subject which is often either hidden away or ignored because it's unfamiliar or uncomfortable. And that is about not only about dying in the process of dying, but also more focused on the death and funeral and traditional burial or non-traditional burial after death. Today's show is live, and you are invited to join us in our discussion. To pose a question for Heidi or make a comment about our topic, you can, and we welcome that. You can reach us on air at area code 805-781-3875. Again, 781-3875. And back to you, Heidi. What are some of the most common myths that you've run into that people generally have about after death care of loved ones?
I think the biggest myth or question or concern is, does it smell? Is it legal? Is it going to freak out my kids? Those kinds of things. I think those are the questions and the comments that I get mostly.
So can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. I think every situation is so different.
Sure.
So I can't flat out say, oh,
this is the way. Yeah. Yeah.
But I can say that it is legal in the state of California and other states. But I want to really stress that it's important for people to check out their state laws, their local laws, to check in and to really do their research. Families can really have this hands-on and involvement, but they need to do their homework as well, just like anything else. As far as smell, keeping the temperature down in a room, keeping the body cold, those are basic things that we talk to people about. But if you don't, if it's a hot day and somebody's had a real serious illness that does require, well, I should say, if there's something that's going on with the body and the body is not being cared for in a way, whether it's bed sores or things like that, yeah, smells can happen. But in the 30 plus years that I've doing this and having many families, I've never had a problem, and it's all in how we educate the families and keeping the temperature down and things cool. So that might be a little bit more information than
listeners
want to hear.
No, they can not hear if they want to not hear.
and there are other things too. I can't think right now off the top of my head, but those are the big ones. Oh, as far as children, sometimes people say, "Well, is this going to freak out my child?
Will it scar them for life?" Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And actually, what I've found is our feelings around death and how we approach it often is an indication of what our kids are going to pick up from us. If we're freaked out about it, then they're going to be freaked out about it. If we're treating this as a very normal, healthy, beautiful part of life, or a natural transition, often the children are very accepting and really, really quite okay around it. It's really how we deal with it. I've had situations where a young parent has passed away, somebody in their 40s, and the kids were, I think, fourth grade and sixth grade. And they were very involved. The body was left at the house, and we, you know, created a beautiful environment for the father. And the children would run in and out, and their friends were coming over, and the dogs barking, and the screen doors slamming, and life is happening. And the children were really, really lovely around it. And okay, they were sad. They were very sad. But it was beautiful to see the normal interaction.
Heidi, you mentioned one of the families that you featured in the film. You were actually filming it over the course, I think you said, of a year, correct?
Yes.
So the person who was dying was actually in the process of dying during that period of time and then died, and then you worked with them on the funeral, correct, at home?
Yes. Yeah.
So was that individual involved in the planning of their funeral? Is that part of the process?
Yes. It's not always the part, but
sure.
Mostly. In the film, the woman, and her name was Julie, she was very much part of planning and taking control of her situation. Her brother made a beautiful casket for her. She picked out the clothing. She redecorated her room. She had a very clear plan as to this is what I want to do and this is how I want it to be done. And her, you know, fortunately, she had a family that was really supportive of that. Not everybody has that.
Mm-hmm.
But it was pretty amazing how behind her and how involved her siblings were. Now, many people that I talk to who know about this and want to do this, they write everything down, and I do encourage people to write that stuff down. Write down what you want to wear. Write down the music you like, the flowers you want, whether it's for a home funeral or not, to bring more consciousness around this last time in our lives.
What do you think for home funerals? You know, I also grew up overseas, so home funerals are not uncommon to me either, but in this country they are not the common. More times than not, it's kind of like at the death, that's kind of the ending of the relationship with the families. Would you agree with that?
In terms
of the physical interaction.
Yeah, definitely with the physical interaction, but I'm a believer that there's a lot more going on than we are privy to, in the sense that our physical eye can see. I mean, I believe that we are connected.
Sure,
on some
sure.
level.
Yeah, and emotionally there's an ongoing connection. But in terms of the physicality of it, have you, in your film, how do you handle the relationship with the traditional funerals and funeral homes and some of the messaging that comes from that around what is allowable or not allowable?
Well, I feel that the corporate funeral industry versus the family-owned independent industry is different.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not shy to say, hey, if you're going to use a funeral home, use one that's family-owned and operated.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, that's just my opinion. I try to buy local. I try to do things on a more local and community level. So why wouldn't we also choose a funeral home that's run by a family rather than a big corporation? So in the film, I do talk about that a little bit. That being said, I have very great relationships and good support from funeral homes here in the Sacramento area. they are family owned. And so I think it's important not to alienate ourselves from the traditional funeral industry.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like we really need to work hand in hand. And for every family and every individual who I think is thinking about doing this, there are different degrees as to how much you can do. You know, some families may just want to bathe and dress the body and then hang out with the body for a few hours and then have a funeral home come and pick that person up.
Mm-hmm.
Other families want to really do the whole thing, driving the body to the crematorium, or, you know, they're different levels. But it's really important to find the right approach for your family and for you. I think that that's really, really important.
And that happens by going back to what you were talking about opening the conversation or a dialogue?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Is that something that you think is happening more within, for instance, family-owned funeral homes and the funeral industry, so that there's kind of more of a collaboration? Because I can certainly see how having different choices and different levels of engagement of what people are comfortable with is really important.
I think funeral homes today really are needing to pay attention as to what's happening. I mean, this movement is really starting to take hold, and there will be more changes. Funeral homes that are paying attention, the smaller ones and perhaps the larger ones, I think they are recognizing that the feeling, the mood is changing among many people, whether it's baby boomers or not. They're kind of wondering what's going on, and I think they are receptive. And really, if a family goes to a funeral home, a locally owned one, and sits down and says, look, this is what I want to do, oftentimes they will help them and be really open to that. And there are others that just flat out will look at you like you're nuts. So shop around. I mean, you really need to shop around.
In the film, too, you talk about the green nature of burials and funerals. Can you talk a little bit about that, the environment and the impact?
Yeah, I think there's such a big consciousness that's coming around the whole green burial thing, and really some good work is happening. We touch on it a little bit. Green burials are really for people who don't want to have their last parting gift to the planet be a bronze casket in the ground in a concrete vault or whatever, and formaldehyde and all that, which is what many of us have been doing for years and years. So green burial really is the idea of not buying into all that and not using all that, but to just have a simple shroud or a pine box, and to keep it, you know, less is more in that regard. We don't need all that stuff. So green burial is ideally just being naked in the earth is the ultimate green burial.
Well, and there are a lot of, I think there are a lot of people that are looking at a variety of ways of doing green burials now, from, I believe, mushroom suits to simple shrouds.
Yeah.
To material that will decompose.
Yeah.
In the earth and be organic.
I just listened to Katrina Spade, who's the head of the Urban Death Project. I think that's how you say her title of her project, Katrina Spade. And she's working on a really remarkable prototype on human composting, which I know sounds ghastly in a way, but it's really not. Essentially, it's just the body with nothing going into the earth, and how the earth is around the corpse and how it breaks down and then ultimately ends up in being beautiful, rich compost. Now, you know, people are thinking, I'm not going to spread that on my vegetable garden. No, but you could put it in a beautiful rose garden or trees or whatever. But she's has some very interesting things that I think warrant a deeper look. And a lot of people are re-examining how do we dispose of our body. You know, a lot of people do cremation on the West Coast. Mm-hmm. Well, is cremation really okay for the environment?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for years I just assumed, yeah, I'm going to be cremated, but now I'm stopping and going, huh, is that okay for the environment? Do I want to do that? So I'm constantly surprised and rethinking, well, what do I want to do?
You're listening to KCBX, your public radio station, at 90.1 San Luis Obispo, 91.7 Salinas de Paso Robles, 89.5 Santa Barbara, and around the world at kcbx.org. Julie, Ron, and Jared all are unique individuals with very different circumstances, and they're portrayed in a documentary, In the Parlor, The Final Goodbye. The film offers an inside view of what family-directed death care might look like. And it's not about assisted suicide, hospice, or palliative care, but what takes place after an individual has died at home. The interviews, there are interviews with both the funeral industry and advocates that open the possibility of questioning some of the more mainstream options that are becoming more increasingly available and questioning what's good and what's bad for the environment. Heidi Boucher, a home death care guide, the writer, director, and producer of the film and a filmmaker, is my guest on today's show, and she's sharing her thoughts about why she made the film, the impact of the film, and also a little bit of information about directed death care. Your thoughts and comments and questions are welcome about today's topic. We'd love to hear from you. Please call us at 805-781-3875. Again, that's 805-781-3875. And Heidi, you are going to be coming back to San Luis Obispo County. You're coming back to San Luis Obispo in this month, actually, in July, on July 20th.
Yes, I'm very excited, actually.
And so the film is once again going to be available to be viewed. And it's available to the public at no cost. And it's going to be shown at the Masons Hall in San Luis Obispo. And then there's a question and answer with you following the film too, correct?
Yes, I will be there to answer any questions that folks might have.
And what, you know, when you've done this before and you've had people who ask questions, do you have a common question that comes up, one that more times than not You'll get?
Just back to the one, is it legal and does it smell? And those really are the two biggest, the most popular questions.
Yeah, well, I think there's obviously there's a clear understanding that anything outside of a burial through a funeral home is illegal, correct? I mean, is that what people's understanding kind of is?
I think, I don't know. I mean, people, gosh, yeah, I mean, a lot of assumptions are made because we just turn our loved ones over to funeral industry professionals. There are questions about where can I bury somebody, and you'd be surprised. I mean, if it's not within city limits and you do the appropriate paperwork and you check with your counties, you know, some people can actually be buried on their own property.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
I didn't know that for years and years. So, again, it's that thing where we just have to pull the curtain back a little bit and say, okay, if I want to do this, I got to do the research.
Yeah. And it's probably not research that you want to do a lot of after the death has occurred, correct?
I mean, absolutely.
I would think trying to call around and find out what you can and can't do, that's something you want to, if you're thinking that would be something you'd be curious about or supportive of, it would be better before an incident did occur, a death did occur, to start making those phone calls or inquiries.
Yeah. And as much as you can do beforehand with anything is going to make the situation that much easier.
Okay. We have a caller who's calling in. I'm going to bring Bobby in. Bobby, are you there?
I am.
Hi.
Hi.
And Heidi can hear you also. So you had a question or comment?
Well, I do have a question. I mean, I've recently been giving this a lot of thought, and I have come to the conclusion that my preference would be to die and not be embalmed, but to be put on a funeral pyre. And I don't know if that's legal in the United States.
Heidi, I'll turn that over to you. I don't have a clue. Heidi?
Hello, this is Bobby.
What?
I don't know where Heidi is.
You know what, Bobby? I think Heidi's phone may have died, and she'll be calling us back in just a moment. I think she's back. Hold on just a sec. She's going to have to call back in. So the, interesting question on a funeral, on a pyre. And I don't know, you know, have you done any inquiries in the county about it? Have you called anybody?
No, I have not. I actually have just started thinking about that in the past few weeks. So I haven't done any inquiries. But, you know, to me, that seems like what a way to go.
Heidi?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, and I think I just lost Bobby. Bobby's question was whether or not it is legal to do a funeral pyre, if she wanted to be buried on a funeral pyre.
I don't think it is, but I do recall seeing and meeting a woman, and I believe in Colorado, they might, gosh, I don't want to say anything that's wrong, but I think there might be a place in Colorado that they're actually doing that or looking into doing that. It takes a really long time for the body to burn.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there are physical things that take place. But if I remember correctly, there is a movement in Colorado that is trying to do some of this, and I just wish I could remember the name. Again, going online and doing some research might pull up this woman's name, and I'm sorry that I don't recall.
Do people typically have to go through, for instance, county planning or county permitting or... Do you have some?
Well, you mean with doing a funeral pyre?
Yeah, whatever their questions are. Yeah.
I don't know of anybody who's doing that. And I think it would be, I would be really surprised if people are actually doing that unless you are, you know, it's some religious thing that you have been doing for a long time and you have permission for. I really don't know. But back to the question that people ask, often that is also one of them as well.
Oh, really? You've gotten that one before?
Yeah, actually,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And
so, Bobby, I wish I could be more helpful on that one.
Okay. And we have actually someone who's calling in, and I think it's Carrie, who may have an answer to that. So hold on. Carrie, are you there?
I am.
And you have an answer?
I do.
Uh-oh.
Hi, Holly. Okay. The place in Colorado is in Crestone, Colorado, and it is a EPA-sanctioned funeral pyre available only to community members.
Ah.
And that's the only place in the United States that has EPA approval for that kind of disposition. So you can't just travel to Crestone to have it done. You have to already be an established community member.
Oh, gosh. Thank you. That's really helpful, Carrie. Thank you so much.
And Carrie, I'm glad you called in because you've done a lot of research in this community about what people can and cannot do in terms of alternative burials, correct?
I have.
So are there options for home funerals here in San Luis County?
Well, this, as far as state regulation goes, disposition regulations cover burial, cremation, and body donation. And there's also deep-sea full-body burial available within the parameters set forth by the EPA. And as far as green burial options, there is a cemetery at San Luis Obispo Cemetery that has green burial options, and that's the only green burial options available in the community at the moment. And I am working with different groups of people that are very interested in creating conservation green burial grounds in the county or in a neighboring county. So there will be something more available in that regard soon.
Okay. And Carrie, you've been working on some information that is going up on a website. Has that actually become active?
The website is live. The web address is fcaslo.org, and it's sponsored by a nonprofit, national nonprofit, the affiliate in Central California, and that's the Funeral Consumers Alliance. And it's an information resource advocacy website so that people can do research and have numbers to call and learn about options that extend beyond what is normally and readily available to them in this realm.
Okay. And can you give that again?
Sure. It's F as in Frank, C as in cat, A as in apple, S-L-O, fcaslo.org.
Okay, great. And I appreciate you calling in. And that actually will help when Heidi does her presentation on the 20th as well.
Yes, great. Thank you.
Thank you, Heidi. Love the movie. Love that you do the work that you do.
Thank you, Carrie. You too.
Okay.
Bye, Carrie.
Bye-bye. Bye.
So, Heidi, the movie that you, the film is going to be shown. How long is the film?
The film is 1 hour and 19 minutes.
And so what's been your feedback from audiences that have viewed it? Do they come away from it going, God, that's the saddest thing I've ever seen in my life. I don't think I've decided I just simply don't want to die. That's the solution here. Or what has been your feedback?
Honestly, the feedback has been overwhelmingly positive and lovely. I mean, I don't know what to say other than people are really touched. They're very moved. And, I'm overwhelmed, actually. And you know, I think in some cases it brings up some frustration and anger, not in many people, but in a few, where they feel like, gosh, I wish I had known. I wish I had known.
Mm-hmm. As so, that this could have been an option.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I have not had, so far, knock on wood, I have not had anybody walk out. Well, no, that's not true. I had one person say, this is great, but it's not for me.
Mm-hmm. Good.
But most, which, yeah, I mean, I applaud that. But mostly people are really moved and rethinking their own end-of-life issues and care and all that, and what they might do for family members as well.
Well, I think the really cool thing about it, too, is that people can think about it and choose a traditional way after thinking about it and knowing there may be some alternatives, and they're more comfortable with what we currently traditionally do, rather than just falling into something because you don't think there's any other way.
Right. Yeah. I mean, just like anything else, we have to have as many options put before us so that we really know. And if we know about this and think, okay, I'm going to check into it, but it's not for me,
mm-hmm.
that's fine. That's great. It's just another way. Just a different way.
Do you get questions from people who are concerned that if loved ones are involved more in their dying and their after death disposal or their body or engaging with their body, that somehow it is more difficult for them in their grieving, that, you know, they may find that it's very distressing for them? Have you found that to be the experience in your work?
No, quite the opposite, actually. It tends to really allow the family and the person or the community, the friends, have a little bit more time to disconnect and to start that grieving process. I've never had a family or met a person who said, gosh, I really wish we didn't do that.
Hmm.
In fact, it's been the opposite. It's been, I'm really glad that we did do that. And there have been a few times where one family member was very interested in doing a home funeral and other families thought the person just was out of their mind.
Mm-hmm.
Then they said, well, we'll do it because you want to do it. Well, then those people that were really questioning it or didn't feel comfortable with it, I would say easily 100% of the time, and again, in my situation or my experience, those family members came around and said, wow, thank you, I had no idea, and ended up being the biggest advocates of having more involvement. So with time, the grieving tends to germinate and to move along in a different way than when we only see the body for an hour or less, or, you know, gets taken away.
Yeah, yeah. And the impact on children, you haven't seen a horrible impact on children either. And I think that's a big concern for people, that there's a certain age at which human beings can be exposed to death, and it typically should be animals first. You know, I've heard that from people,
yeah,
too.
Yeah.
Rather than humans.
Yeah. Well, no, absolutely. I agree. And not to sound, you know, silly, but look, whether we're talking about introducing our children to different kinds of foods or cultures or whatever it may be, we as parents and community members have a responsibility to teach our children in an appropriate way about things. If I teach my child that yogurt is bad, they're going to think yogurt is bad.
Mm-hmm.
So just like everything, they look to us and turn to us and watch how we react to things. So it's quite beautiful sometimes to see how a child who's still sad that their cat has died or their dog or their fish or their bird, but isn't it beautiful how their first instinct is to find a box, dig a hole, put little flowers around, and to have a funeral.
And to have a ceremony, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, something to remember. And we have a call from Jill. I'm going to bring her in. Jill, you had a question or comment?
Yes.
Hi.
Hi, Jill.
Yes, hi. My question was actually a very simple one. What time is this happening on July 20th?
It'll happen at 7 p.m. at the Masons Hall in San Luis Obispo, and that's on Marsh Street.
Masons Hall on Marsh, okay.
Mm-hmm. It's next to the post office.
Next to the post office.
Uh-huh.
And so it will start at 7. The film will be shown, and then there'll be Q&A?
Yep. There'll be Q&A with Heidi.
Okay, wonderful. And the other question you might not be able to answer because the other gal has already gone off, but one of you mentioned that there's one place in San Luis that does offer green burial options, and I wondered if anyone knew which place that was.
Let me give you the website that she gave to go to.
Okay.
And it's F as in Frank, C as in cat, A mm-hmm. as in Adam, SLO.org.
Wonderful. All right.
Yeah.
And the thing at the Mason Hall is there an entrance fee or something? Or
there is not. No, it's being sponsored by Hospice of San Luis Obispo County.
Beautiful. Okay.
And it's for education. And Heidi has agreed to come back and do another showing of this film and be a part of this education.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Thank you,
Jill.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And for people that do come and see the film, Heidi, all of a sudden my microphone went weird. Are you still there, Heidi? For people that do come to see the film is a really intimate look, you know, and kind of a sharing of an intimate relationship and a journey that Heidi had with three individuals that she worked with as a death care guide who shared the process of their end of life through their relationship with their families and also then preparing for and planning for their death. The documentary is one that Heidi is the writer, director, and producer of, and it did come out this year. It was shown in San Luis Obispo at the International Film Festival, and actually I think it was the first film festival that Heidi was a part of. And she's been showing it to different films or to different venues and different film festivals. We're going to bring Heidi back in.
Here I am.
There you are again. All of a sudden, I was talking to myself with this incredible feedback and decided I don't care for my voice nearly as much as I like yours. So it works out much better to have you on the line. The families that you talk with, it's got to be a very sweet, sweet journey to witness. And I would imagine a really intimate that you were able to film, that they would share that and allow you to be involved.
It was one of the most special times in my life, actually. And I feel completely so privileged and so humbled that these families allowed us in and allowed our crew and our equipment. Who does that?
Obviously three people do it, and I know they did it because of their trust in you and all of that, but there had to be more motivation than that. Not that you're not terrific, but there had to be more. There must have been a desire for them to have a message, or, you know, is this kind of part of the legacy for the individual that was dying?
I think so. I think definitely for Julie, because mm-hmm. they had taken care of their parents and also a sister who had passed away. So this was not something new to them, and it was very important that they share their story because they feel very strongly about it. And it's such a beautiful family. I mean, what you see on camera is how they really are. I think Julie, knowing that her last year she was part of this film and part of educating people about this option, it really made her last few months special for her.
Mm-hmm.
And her family has told us that.
Mm.
She told us that.
Mm-hmm.
And they still tell us that, how important it was for her to be part of this.
How long ago did Julie die?
Oh, gosh, how many years? I think that was 3 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And is there... I'm sure that every funeral, every ceremony has some kind of specialness about it. Is there one that really stands out for you that you watched a family do that you felt really kind of was like, gosh, if I had to identify one that just was amazing, this would be it?
No, I they all have
they are
their
magical,
own.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think for me personally, it's what happens in between the funeral. And many of these families that I care for keep the body at home for 3 days. And watching what takes place within those 3 days or 2 days, that, to me, is the magic sacred time, because people are coming in and they're having an experience with the body, with the family, with the moment, and with the environment that's taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And those are really, really special. And I try to just step back and observe. It's not about me. It's about
right. The
family and the person who has died. So... there have been times where I notice a child or a mother looking at the person who has passed away and having those moments of saying goodbye and letting go, and it's not frantic. It's not this frantic sort of state of, oh, my God, it's okay, now it's time. I can let this person go now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a gentleness around it and a beauty. So those are the elements and the qualities that really speak to me and remind me of this work and how special it is to do.
So if you were to say, these individuals, it would be great for them to come and see that film, this film, when it's here on the 20th, are there certain audiences that you think should really definitely come and see it?
Well, my first reaction is anybody who's going to die, and that's everybody, should come and see it.
Okay.
I mean, we have people in their 20s and 30s who see it and go, oh, my gosh, this is amazing. And they have been really, really interested in this, and not from a morbid curiosity, but wow, this is really cool. I didn't know about this. Or they are really affected by their grandparents who have passed, and it really was disturbing to them or upsetting, and so they see a different way, and they've got it locked in their head, and they're going, okay, this is interesting. I like this. So that demographic has been really excellent. And then there's the baby boomer demographic that's really super motivated by at least having the conversation.
Well, the movie's going to show on the 20th at the Masons Hall, and I want to thank my guest, Heidi Boucher, for joining me today, and everyone who called in with comments and questions. Heidi, thank you very much. Next
thank
week,
you.
Please join Fred Monroe on Central Coast Voices here at KCBX.